This is Dr. Jimmy Nichols, equine nutritionist. On this podcast, we will explore unique cases, debunk popular myths, and break down advanced research data. Join me for a little fun, a lot of science, and some real-world advice for feeding horses. This should be a fun episode, and I think it's going to be one that a lot of us can relate to. I'm not sure about you, but there was definitely a time in my life where I had no idea how to compare different feeds, and I had no idea how to actually make the best feed choice for my horses. I mean, it's a little bit intimidating walking into a feed store when there's 89 different horse feeds, and you're expected to just know what you want, okay? I mean, I'm totally willing to admit it now, but there was a time when I would literally walk into a feed store and I would start pulling feed tags off and I'd like hold them side by side. And then when a store associate or someone comes by and they're, you know, hey, do you need some help? I'm like, oh no, I don't need help. I know exactly what I'm looking for. Now, did I really know what I was looking for? Not really. I mean, yeah, I could look at protein, I could look at fat and fiber, and I could compare some vitamin and mineral values. But I mean, outside of that, I was pretty lost. So I did what most people do. I reverted to price as my guide, right? So the more expensive, the better, right? But better for what? Okay. So after nearly 10 years of being intimately entrenched in the feed manufacturing and formulation world, I now understand that price does not tell us everything. Okay. So there are some feeds out there that have very basic or lacking nutritional profiles, but still cost a heck of a lot of money. All right. Maybe that's because the brand has to account for a really high marketing budget. Or maybe they're having to pay third parties to manufacture and package their product. Or maybe they're having to use ingredients, or they are using ingredients that are just incredibly hard to source. I mean, I don't know. There's probably a million reasons why the most expensive bag on the shelf just simply isn't the best choice, okay? Now, when I say isn't the best choice, I mean that those feeds are both expensive and they have really big holes in their nutritional value, okay? So today, I am going to walk you through the process that I use now to evaluate different feeds, and I'm going to talk through the path that I use to kind of help guide customers when they ask for my advice. So before I get into that, I actually want to read you the listener question that inspired this episode. So this question came from Stacy, and she says, I'd love to hear your opinions on different feed ingredients and how to evaluate and compare two different brands. I understand good ingredients like alfalfa meal and beet pulp, but are there ones that we should avoid? From what I've heard, wheat and corn are big no-nos from horses, yet they're found in most horse feeds. And if we're trying to decide between two feeds, like two different brands of a growth formula, say, what should we be looking at? If the major categories are all equal, like protein, calories, energy, what should we be looking at? The ingredients? Should we be looking at the feeding rates? Should we be looking at the mineral package? Or do we just go with Susie at the barn's opinion? Thanks. I look forward to your response. I really appreciate that, Stacy. Thank you for asking that question. And I think a lot of people are actually in this boat. You know, we want to make informed decisions on what to feed to our horses, but we don't really have that roadmap or that blueprint in place for making that informed decision. So I'm going to share with you guys my strategy, and I hope that it helps some of you. So I'm going to break this down into steps. I have kind of an 8-step process. So step number one, I ask, who formulates the products? Okay. Is it someone that is specifically trained in nutrition? All right. These people are generally going to have a PhD or at very least a master's degree. Okay. I am a little bit cautious about veterinarians designing products. Okay. So I'm sure that a lot of ears may have just pricked up right there. Going like, wait, what are you saying about my vet? So let me explain. Veterinarians actually get pretty little training on nutrition in vet school. In fact, research studies have shown that the majority of veterinarians only really take one nutrition class in vet school. And then let's not overlook the fact that that class is generally going to be covering multiple species, not just horses. Okay. And just so that you guys know, this isn't just a personal opinion, okay? There's actual research out there on the subject. So a study that was presented in 2019 at the Equine Science Society meetings showed that 51% of equine veterinarians were actually dissatisfied with the nutritional training that they received in vet school. Okay, so here's the thing. That study also showed that on average, an equine veterinarian only commits 24 hours in their entire career to improving their knowledge in equine nutrition, which in this particular study, if you did that math, that worked out to be about 1 hour for every year in the profession. Okay. So I think the average tenure for the vets in this study was around 23 or 24 years. Now, in no way, shape, or form am I trying to talk down on vets. I mean, I get it. There are only so many hours in a day. There are only so many days in a year. And I would way rather my veterinarians spend their time in continuing education on things like learning new techniques and surgical procedures or learning about the newest technologies for IRAP therapy or whatever else. I mean, I guess I say all of that just to tee up the idea that, you know, I would never in my wildest dreams expect every veterinarian to have the same knowledge base as someone with a PhD who spent 10 years in college on a path to specifically become an equine nutritionist. Okay. So in the same respect, I would never expect a PhD equine nutritionist to perform a colic surgery, right? I mean, it's just, it is two totally different fields, but I think too many horse owners expect their veterinarian to have that level of knowledge in nutrition that, you know, a PhD would. Now, there are some veterinarians out there who have, who do have that training, who do have that knowledge. You know, there are a lot out there that have double degrees. Maybe they have the DVM, but then they also went and got a PhD or a master's and they specifically studied equine nutrition. There are also vets out there who have immersed themselves in industry. And maybe they spent little or no time actually practicing medicine, but they really found that their passion was in nutrition. And those vets are certainly going to have put forth that effort in, you know, reading the research, taking the CE hours, and just really getting that solid understanding of nutrition. So, okay, I don't want to get off on too much of a rabbit trail here, but I've experienced probably one too many veterinarians making the exact wrong nutritional recommendation for their client, you know, especially when a nutrition-related disease is involved. You know, so my personal favorite is that says, your horse has terrible ulcers and is diagnosed with PSSM1, right? They tie up. So you should immediately get him on an oats-only diet. Like my eyes just got huge. And you know, if I was writing or texting, I might insert the little like blow your mind emoji, right? I mean, that's exactly the wrong diet that you would do for that situation. So, okay, back to my original point for step one, do your homework. Okay. Who's formulating your feeds? Anyone can say that they're an equine nutritionist, just like anyone can say they're a horse trainer. Right? We all know that there are a lot of differences in what you get from one horse trainer to another, and it's the same for equine nutrition. Anyone can throw some ingredients together, run it through a feed mill, slap a tag on it, use a pretty bag, sell it through social media or whatever, okay? But you're going to get a whole different effect out of a feed that is made by a skilled nutritionist that has advanced training and experience in that field. So to recap step number one, ask who formulates the products, ask what degree they have or what experience they have that qualifies them to be an equine nutritionist. And then it's your choice, okay? So some people are perfectly comfortable with Uncle Joe formulating their product, and others want the reliability and trust that comes from a PhD equine nutritionist. So totally your choice. That's step number one. All right, step number two. I want you to go look at the actual tag on the product. Right? Like what's physically on the label, not necessarily what's listed online. I want you to go actually look at what's on the bag itself. Okay. And I want you to bypass the normal places that people look. Okay. We're going to skip past the protein. We're going to skip past the fat. We're going to skip past the fiber, and we're going to go down to the ingredients list. So in this step, what I'm doing is I'm trying to decide if the product is least cost formulated or if it has an open label. So if the first line or two of ingredients contain the words processed products or byproducts, that means that it is likely a least cost formulation. Okay, not always, but most of the time. Least cost formulated products basically means that the ingredients are subject to change at any time without any notice to the buyer. Okay, for example, When a company uses the term grain products, that means that they are using any one or combination of about 10 or 12 different ingredients that fall into that classification. Okay, so examples would be corn, oats, barley, milo or grain sorghum, wheat, rye, you know, etc. Okay, the benefit here to a least cost formulation is that you get a feed that is the lowest price possible at all times. All right, so let's say the commodity prices for corn are really low. The formulators would actually add more corn to the formula to help bring that price down and make it cheaper. Well, then let's say that corn prices just skyrocket 1 week, all right? They're not going to want corn in that formula anymore because now it's going to be more expensive. So they would take out the corn or take out a large part of it if they don't take out all, and they would replace it with wheat or milo or sorghum, you know, whatever happens to be cheap at the time but has a similar nutrition profile. And it's perfectly legal for this to go on, for them to make those changes without letting anyone know, because those ingredients all fall under that collective term, grain products, which is what is listed in the ingredient list. Now, we all know how incredibly sensitive a horse's digestive tract is. And as horse owners, you know, we typically do everything that we can to limit change in the diet. Well, in all of their environment, really, but the diet especially. You know, if we do make dietary changes, we generally recommend that people do it really slow over a period of, you know, say 2 weeks. So in my personal opinion, I try to steer clear of least cost formulated products, just because I don't want that unexpected or uncontrollable change happening every time I pick up a new lot code of feed. All right. So I always look for feeds that promote themselves as being locked or fixed formulas. The only real definitive way to know if a formula is locked is to call the manufacturer and ask. But most companies that are locked or fixed formula are, you know, they're going to actively promote that idea because, I mean, let's be realistic. Locking a formula is really hard to do and it's costly. So it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense for a company to go to all that effort and all that expense to have a locked formula policy and then not just, you know, sing it out to the world. There are multiple companies that are doing this, you know, Bluebonnet Feeds, of course, Triple Crown, Buckeye Tribute. Those are some that I know for sure that do have this locked formula policy in place. So on an open label, the ingredients are going to be listed by their actual name. So I'm a big fan of base ingredients like alfalfa meal and beet pulp. I like alfalfa meal, because it's going to have naturally occurring high quality amino acids, right? So I like to pull amino acids from naturally occurring sources because there's actually research out there showing that the body utilizes amino acids coming from natural ingredients like alfalfa or soybean meal more effectively than when we use the synthetic forms. So for example, you know, a diet with an alfalfa base is going to have a more effective amino acid play for a horse than a diet that is based with, say, corn and oats, and then the nutritionist adds L-lysine to make up for what the corn and oats lack in terms of those amino acids. I also really like beet pulp just because of its benefits to the health of the hindgut. I really like things like rice bran, flaxseed, plant oils, marine oils for fat. As far as what to stay away from, okay, I generally do avoid corn in horse diets just because of its high starch content. But then the other piece that comes to play when you are dealing with corn is its potential to carry mycotoxins. Okay. So on that note, you know, I also generally avoid ingredients that are byproducts of corn, particularly distiller's grains. Okay. Distiller's grains have a major risk of carrying high levels of mycotoxins, specifically one called fumonisin. And fumonisin is very, very, very dangerous for horses at very low levels. So most distiller's grains are going into cattle diets, and cattle are a lot more tolerant to those toxins. So many mills out there, let's assume that they are testing, not all mills test, but many of them do. Most of those mills are accepting both their corn and their DDGs at levels that are safe for cattle. And those levels are just simply too high for horses. Okay. They're not horse safe. So at Bluebonnet Feeds, for example, you know, Bluebonnet Feeds both, they test those ingredients, first of all, and then accepts those ingredients only if they meet the horse safe levels. And that's even if those ingredients are going into products for other species. So for example, you're not going to find distiller's grains in a horse product from Bluebonnet Feeds, but you are going to find distiller's grains in products that they make for other species. So by making sure that whatever ingredients come in test at horse safe levels, it means there's never a chance of, you know, the horse feed getting accidentally exposed to those high levels of toxins through cross-contamination or accidents that could happen in the mill. So it's kind of just an extra safety measure. You know, I know a lot of people get pretty wound up over soybean meal and wheat middlings. So as a general rule, I don't mind either of those in the diet. In fact, I personally like soybean meal because it has those naturally occurring high levels of amino acids. You know, I guess I feel like eliminating soybean meal and then having to turn around and add those amino acids back in, I'm just going to call it the synthetic form. That's probably not the right way to talk about it. But, you know, by taking the naturally occurring source away and having to go back with the synthetics, I feel like that kind of defeats the purpose of creating a diet that is more natural to the horse's body. And also, so far, there's no scientific evidence, at least that I'm aware of, that says that we should avoid soybean meal in horses. Wheat middlings definitely gets a bad rap, and some people mistakenly call it a filler, or they call it a junk ingredient. I see that on social media a lot, and that's just not true, okay? Wheat middlings are actually, they're pretty decent as far as the nutrient profile goes. In fact, they're not too far off of what we would typically see in alfalfa meal. So on a dry matter basis, according to the NRC, wheat middlings are like 18.5% protein. They're like 4.5% fat. They have more lysine than oats. They have more calories than both oats and alfalfa. So from a nutritional perspective, I mean, they're a pretty decent ingredient. I think along the lines of soybeans, there's been a little bit of crossover, maybe of opinions from the human world, with all of the talk going on about, you know, people wanting to go gluten-free or avoid gluten. So I'm kind of guessing that maybe that's where people are getting their jaded view of wheat middlings. But again, you know, so far I'm not aware of any scientific evidence that suggests that, you know, we should avoid feeding wheat middlings to horses as a general population. Let's see. Other ingredients that maybe get a bad rap sometimes are soybean hulls and rice hulls. Okay. I mean, sometimes as a nutritionist, like, you just need to get some more fiber in the diet. You need to get more fiber in the formula. And those are two really good options. So, you know, if you're trying to keep the protein content from getting super out of control, or if you're trying to keep the price of the feed from getting super out of control, those are two ingredients that are typically leaned on. So those are kind of the general guidelines that I use when it comes to ingredients. Let's go to step three. So step three is, I like to find out what the manufacturer's policy is on ionophore use. So without a doubt, I 100% would never buy my horse feed from a facility that produces feeds that contain ionophores. Okay. If you want to learn more about ionophores, I actually did an in-depth episode, episode number 10, discusses ionophores, everything you'd want to know about the whole situation. But the basic point is, ionophores are a medication that are very commonly added in cattle feeds and other production livestock. In fact, it's almost a guarantee that any feed company with a focus on making cattle feeds is going to be using this medication in their facility. So, trade names that you might be more familiar with. So, you know, ionophore is the drug class. It's basically a feed through antibiotic. Rumensin and Bovatec would be two trade names that would contain ionophores. But there are obviously certainly more out there. So long story short, that medication can kill a horse. Or at the very least, if they get long-term chronic low-grade exposure, say through cross-contamination in the mill, it can cause some long-term damage to the body. So there are companies out there that produce only in ionophore-free facilities. Okay, Bluebonnet Feeds is definitely one of them. But this is just, it's another thing that you're going to have to call and ask about. So just because the feed doesn't contain ionophores itself doesn't necessarily mean that it isn't run through the same equipment that ionophore containing feeds are run on. So, you know, this is a big one for me. Make sure that you are buying from a horse safe facility that does not allow ionophores on their property. Okay, step number four is feeding rates. It's important to understand your own goals. Okay, are you wanting to feed at a high level of grain or are you wanting to feed a low level? All right, so for me personally, let's take my senior horse who has virtually no teeth left. Okay, I have to feed him a very high feeding rate because I need the fiber. He can't eat hay anymore, so the fiber portion has to come from the grain that I use. So that means that the feed is going to have to be high in fiber, but it's also going to have to be lower in things like fat, vitamins, minerals, and even the amino acids in order to allow me to feed at a super high rate, which is like 15 to 20 pounds per day. Okay. On the flip side, my five-year-old mare is an absolute hay-eating machine, and so she's going to get the bulk of her nutrition from forage. So for her, I want a lower feeding rate feed that's going to balance her needs in the smallest amount of grain possible. So with her, it's going to be closer to 4 pounds per day. Those are my needs, okay? So that means that I'm going to have to choose a feed for her that's going to be really nutrient dense, right? It has to have really high levels of amino acids and fat and vitamins and minerals, okay? So step four is really all about understanding, you know, what you are looking for in terms of feeding rates. And then you have to go look at that feed tag and see how much they recommend to feed, okay? So for example, one feed may require you to feed 10 to 15 pounds per day to meet requirements, while another feed might be formulated to meet those exact same requirements in just 4 to 6 pounds per day, okay? So what you don't want to do is you do not want to end up feeding half of the recommended rate of the high feeding rate, okay? Because then you're only going to be giving your horse half of the nutrition that you think you are, which could then end up causing deficiencies in certain areas. And on the flip side, if you feed more than the recommended rates, you can actually cause your horse to, you can cause them to either back off of their feed or at the very least, you're going to cause their body to have to work extra hard to process and get rid of all of the, you know, the excess protein and the excess mineral vitamins, et cetera. Okay. So step four is really all about, you know, deciding what kind of feeding rate you need. And then you just have to look at the feed tag and determine if it meets your needs. Okay, step five is to determine the trace mineral quality, all right? Trace minerals, so things like copper, zinc, and manganese are so, in my opinion, they are so overlooked in their level of importance within the body. So first of all, you want to look and make sure that all three of those, so copper, zinc, and manganese, you want to make sure that all three of them are listed under the guaranteed analysis. But then, okay, assuming they are, the more important step is actually then to move to that ingredients list and see where they fall. So my rule of thumb is that in a very high quality feed, the first time that I see the word copper in the ingredient list, it should be connected to the words lysine complex. Okay. The first time that I see the word zinc in the ingredient list, it should be connected to the words methionine complex. And then the first time that I see the word manganese in the ingredient list, it also should be connected to the words methionine complex. Okay. After that, you may or may not see the words copper, zinc, or manganese appear again in that ingredient list. If they don't appear again, that means you have got a very good quality feed that is providing 100% of those trace minerals in the most bioavailable form possible. OK, Okay. And that particular form has over 250 published peer-reviewed scientific studies showing its benefits within the body, right? Everything from hair quality to hoof health to ulcer prevention, heat stress tolerance, pregnancy benefit. I mean, the list goes on. Now, most feeds out there are going to supplement with what we call inorganic sources of those three trace minerals. So if you see the words copper, zinc, or manganese attached to words like sulfate or oxide, okay, that's your clue that the nutritionist is formulating with minerals that are inorganic. They're going to be a little bit lower in cost. They're also going to be a little bit less beneficial to your horse. Okay, so you need to decide if that's an area that you want to sacrifice or not, right? If you are looking for an economy feed, you are most likely not going to be getting those trace minerals at all, or if you do, they're likely going to be included in lower levels that have not been research proven, right? And when I say they're not going to provide those trace minerals, I mean they're not going to be those organic forms of the trace minerals. So, you know, copper lysine complex, zinc methionine complex, manganese methionine complex. Those are the three important ones. Now, here's kind of a little dirty secret I'm going to share with you guys. Some nutritionists will stick these organic forms, okay, so the copper lysine complex, zinc methionine complex, manganese methionine complex, they will stick those forms at low levels into the formula, which means if the tag is written correctly, those are going to be towards the very bottom of the ingredient list and definitely listed behind those sulfate and oxide forms that I mentioned earlier. Now, that's a really big red flag to me that tells me that they're including those organic minerals at really low levels and most likely are just in there as a tag dressing, if you will, meaning they know that people want to see it on the tag, but those minerals are really expensive. So they're only putting very small amounts in there just so that it's in the formula enough that it gets put on the tag, but it's not actually in there at levels that are truly research proven. So as a consumer, you know, we think that we're getting something that we really are not. So for me personally, this, you know, step five is a must have. Step five is really about making sure that the words zinc methionine complex, copper lysine complex, and manganese methionine complex are either exclusive items in the ingredient list, or at the very least, they must be listed higher than things like, you know, zinc sulfate, zinc oxide, copper sulfate, or any other type of inorganic form of those trace minerals. Okay, let's roll on to step number six. Step number six is about checking out that amino acid guarantee. So in my opinion, all horse feeds should have a lysine guarantee at the absolute minimum. Now, good horse feeds are going to have a little bit more extensive guarantee that might include methionine and threonine, and maybe even some others. I don't get too terribly hung up on exactly what that value is for lysine until I first understand the feeding rate of the feed. Okay, so let me explain that a little bit. Let's say that, you know, one feed has a 0.8% lysine, and you look at the feeding rate, and it's a 4-pound feeding rate. Well, then you go look at a second feed and it has only half the amount of lysine, so 0.4%, but the feeding rate is double. It's 8 pounds, right? You're going to get the exact same amount of lysine out of both of those feeds when you use them based on their feeding rates, okay? So for those of you that want the math, what I did is I basically, you multiply the total pounds by 454, that gets you into grams. And then you just take that number and you multiply it by the percent of lysine. So when you take, both of those situations that I mentioned, the 0.8 lysine with a 4-pound feeding rate, and then a 0.4 lysine with an 8-pound feeding rate, when you do the math on both of those are going to provide 14.5 grams of lysine in the diet each day. Now, if I have two feeds that have the exact same feeding rate, okay, say they're 6 pounds per day and one is guaranteeing 0.8 lysine and the other is guaranteeing 0.6 lysine. Okay, I am definitely going to choose the one that has the higher lysine, right? So as a recap to step six, check out how many different amino acids are guaranteed first, Then compare how much lysine you will get when you use the recommended feeding rate. Okay, step number 7. We're closing in. We're down to our last two steps. So step 7 is kind of what I call the bonus round. Okay, these are all of the things that you might consider supplementing a basic feed with. Okay, my opinion here is if they're already built into the feed, I give that a major bonus because it means I don't have to spend extra money on those supplements. And I also don't have to spend the extra time adding those supplements on. And I don't have to remember to reorder those supplements. And it makes for a much simpler feeding instruction chart for my husband or anyone who has to feed my horses when I'm on the road. So my list of bonus round items are prebiotics, probiotics, enzymes, B vitamins, vitamin C, biotin. I make sure that there's appropriate levels of vitamin E, so I don't have to add extra of that. Then if I happen to have a trouble horse that maybe struggles with digestive health, I might look at things like dried seaweed meal, seaweed-derived calcium, lithothamnium. Okay, that's basically three ways you can write essentially the same ingredient. I might also look at butyric acid, and I might also see if it contains any plasma. So those are all things that would be listed either in the guaranteed analysis or in the ingredients list. And certainly would be what I consider a bonus. You know, so if I get down to, you know, like Stacy asked in her original question, if I'm trying to compare two growth formulas and they all have the same protein, fat, fiber, you know, all of that looks the same, then it's kind of that next step is, okay, what's the bonus round? You know, are there prebiotics? Are there probiotics? Compare those levels, right? So probiotics, for example, should be guaranteed on the tag with a CFU per pound. That stands for colony forming unit. That's telling you how many live microorganisms are actually in that feed. You know, look, is vitamin C guaranteed? Is biotin guaranteed? How much vitamin E is being supplied? You know, all of those different things. Okay, the final step, number 8. This is kind of my final checkoff, all right? I cruise through the protein, the fat, and the fiber content, and then I go and I check my starch and sugar levels, okay? So basically what I'm doing here is just making sure that nothing is just totally out of whack. For example, let's say I've got, you know, a good quality hay, I've had it tested, it's got adequate amounts of protein. I don't need to go feed a feed that's 30% protein, right? So it's in this phase that I would just make sure that, you know, I'm not overfeeding protein, right? You know, some horses need extra energy. So in those horses, I might lean a little bit harder on a feed that has maybe a little bit higher starch and sugar or non-structural carbohydrate content, and maybe a little bit lower on the fiber side. If I'm working with a horse that's a little bit too excitable or too hot-headed, I might look for feeds that are higher on that fat percentage, maybe have a little bit more fiber, but then double checking that they are lower in the starch and sugar levels. Okay, so a lower NSC content. And then certainly, you know, if I'm dealing with a horse that has a metabolic condition, I'm definitely going to lean into those starch and sugar levels, calculate out that NSC, and make sure that it's a product, you know, make sure that it's less than 12% non-structural carbs. So there you have it. That is my process for evaluating a feed. So basically, you know, my goal is, like, if someone walked up to me with a handful of feed tags and, you know, the manufacturer was scratched out and they all looked the same and I didn't know who made any of them, I feel pretty confident that I could look at them and rank them in order of what would fit your program the best. And basically, I'm doing that by using this roadmap that I just shared with you all today. So I hope this was useful. And if it was, please tell a friend. In fact, please tell all of your friends. Post a link to this episode on social media. And then don't forget to use the hashtag FeedRoomChemist. And as always, you know, if you're wanting help deciding on the right feed for your situation, Bluebonnet Feeds has a team of nutrition consultants who are available for free virtual consults anytime. Okay. You can register for one of those by visiting bluebonnetfeeds.com and then just click on the resources tab and select nutrition consults.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Feed Room Chemist. If you like what you hear, be sure to share with your friends, post to social media, or give us a review. And as Winston Churchill used to say, no hour of life is wasted that is spent in the saddle. So go saddle up.